cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation, no breathing.
I kind of think we need to change the name of this show to The Credit Report, because we need to have extensive amounts of personal information to make this what it is. That's a great tune, by the way.
Yeah, I
like the first part.
Yeah.
It gets a little dark.
Yeah.
I just like the beat of it. I don't really like the words. But.
Well, you definitely need to get the edited version for this family show.
Absolutely.
But I like that.
The first round of guitar is pretty nice. Like, you can walk onto the stage right at that
exactly.
moment. Like,
That's what I thought. It's Last Resort from Papa Roach. And our special guest today is Jesse Wiggins, a name I'm sure you're very familiar with in recent, especially the Opens, but as a new, well, not really new anymore, but a young touring Elite Series angler, making his mark on the top levels of professional bass fishing. But you're listening to another episode of Inside Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen, and beside me, as always, keeping his thumb ever so hovering over the master control switch at Bassmaster.com, is Jim Sexton.
Hello, hello.
Jim, thanks for being here. Jesse, thanks for being here. Alex in the background, if you hear something, it's probably her correcting Jesse as he gets off track. So does he need that a lot?
Sometimes.
It's important to have that kind of support, my friend.
We all need it.
We all need it. So, look, we've got the season kicked off. You fished the Classic. We would just be recovering from the Sabine River, but that got postponed. So we're looking at a little bit different schedule. But I want you to tell me about the Bassmaster Classic. I know Jim has a lot of questions in that realm, but what did you think going into it and how did it turn out?
Yeah, going into it, you know, it was my second one, and Conroe was last year, and I fished it, and I didn't find any fish at all, really. I mean, it was such a tough lake, but Hartwell, you know, has blueback herring like my home lake, Smith Lake, but I'd never been there, so I didn't really know what to expect as far as the, you know, the lay of the lake, so I went up and pre-practiced for it, and caught a bunch of fish, but it was just all small fish, and I never, you know, found anything in pre-practice, so when practice came, I thought, you know, we had some decent weather, so I thought some would be up shallow, and I fished how I thought I could catch some good ones, and I caught a couple decent ones in practice, but I don't know, it just never panned out like I thought it would. I mean, I just couldn't catch enough big ones to stay, you know, where I could win it, and I really didn't care about, you know, finishing 28th or, you know, 18th. I mean, I just wanted to win, that was it. So I went out the first day and had a decent day. I had 12-something early, and which is pretty good weight early there with spotted bass. So, and then I went fishing for largemouth the rest of the day and just never caught them. But looking back, I think I probably should have did it right the opposite, just went largemouth first, because it just so happened one of the areas, my main area where I caught my biggest ones in practice, that's where Christy was starting every morning. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was leading the first 2 days. And I get there the second day, and he's coming out. And because I get there a little bit earlier the second day, because I'm thinking, okay, I need to go in there earlier because it didn't work later. Well, I went in there earlier, and he's coming out, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I messed
been
up.
Been cleaned already.
Yep, exactly. And that's why, I mean, I caught a few in there that second day, but nothing big. And I got to looking at the show, and, yeah, he caught them in there the first 2 days, you know, early. And so it made me feel okay that I found an area that had some good ones in it. But, of course, my timing was off. So, I mean, it's just still, you know, something I got to learn. And, like, on my home lake, on Smith Lake, that's an evening deal. Like, you go fishing for largemouth later in the day. And that's when I caught them in there, and practice was later in the day, but the conditions was cloudy and rainy, perfect for, they was just biting that day. Mm-hmm. But looking back, that's where I messed up. I mean, I know it's, and I just never recovered after that first day, not catching any big ones, and I just tried to shoot for the moon that second day, and I just stumbled completely. But as far as the overall atmosphere of the Classic, oh my gosh, it's awesome.
What was it like being your second one? So the first one, you know, it's all new, all the hoopla that surrounds it. Were you more relaxed or less worried about all the other stuff this time?
Yeah, I say I was more relaxed, I guess. I mean, I don't really get too worked up anyways. I mean, I'm there to win the tournament, so I try to find, you know, the best way to win it. But it was more, you know, I kind of knew what to expect. I knew how many days was going to be off. You know, we practiced 3 days a week before the tournament starts. So you got to kind of prepare for, you know, your practice really is just looking where the fish may be in the tournament. So it helped. You know, that part helped doing that. So, but yeah, it's, I think it'll get easier. If, you know, I just got to keep qualifying for it. But that's what I've told everybody. I was like, I've, you know, qualified for 2 classics and I've wasted both my opportunities to win $300,000.
So I was wondering about this. So, for 2017, didn't you qualify for the Classic 3 ways?
I qualified for the 2018 Classic three ways. Yeah, for the Open win, the Elite Series points, and then another Open win at the end of the year.
So I wondered if that was so many qualifications where like one of them would just roll
over. You're trying too hard, bro. It's too much, success.
Like, I don't know.
It's like if you score too many runs in baseball, then the next game you've used them up.
I guess
I just hope you hadn't used up all your classics.
It's like church league softball. You know, you can only hit like three home runs, and then you can't hit anymore. So maybe don't aim for the fences so much.
Shoot, I don't know. I like hitting home runs.
You know, I do have a question. This has been brought up a lot. I don't think anybody has really given a good explanation since the Classic and before. A lot of guys have mentioned that, you know, it's a blueback lake. Mm-hmm. And that's a bait fish. It's a herring. How does that make a lake different from, say, a lake that's dominated by shad or perch in the north? What makes that type of fishery unique?
The fish will just absolutely follow the herring wherever they go. I mean, that's the easiest way to say it. I mean, most of the time the herring are in, you know, deeper than 20 foot unless they are spawning. So when they spawn, they get up real shallow, like less than 2 feet. And if you know the lake real well, you'll know places where they go spawn every year, so it's easy to catch them. And that's when they're spawning, the bass are up shallow, and, you know, you can actually get a bait close to the bass that, and you're able to catch them. But when they're not spawning, they're usually deep. And when they're deep, the bass go with them. And sometimes the herring even get too deep for the bass. But it's pretty much wherever the herring are, the bass are not far behind it. Mm-hmm. And just these last few years on Smith Lake, you know, we've got herring now. And, I mean, you can pretty much go to the bank with it. If you can find where the herring are, there's going to be the biggest bass in the lake with them. And, I mean, they're not easy to catch by any means unless they get up shallow. And that's when you have to catch them. Like right now on my home lake on Smith Lake, they're up shallow spawning a little bit, and you can actually catch some bigger ones. But, yeah, that's the main deal with the herring lake is – you got to find the herring. And I'm not real good at it because I haven't did it that long on Smith Lake. But the main deal is if the herring are up shallow, the bass are up shallow, you can catch them. If they're deep, they're going to be hard to catch. And they move around so much, you just never know where they're at. But I've learned, you know, just wintertime fishing on Smith, you just run places until you run into them. That's the only thing you can do. You just got to hope you got enough places through the day and you're eventually going to find them. And when you find them, you can catch multiple, you know, good ones quick. Mm-hmm. But you just never know where they're going to be. I mean, I can't plan my tournament on where they're going to be, but you just have to hit all your places as good as you can and hope you run into them.
Do they affect the fishery in a positive way? Are the bass healthier because of them being in there, you think?
Absolutely. On Smith Lake, they're a heck of a lot healthier. It turned all of our skinny 2.5-pounders we had. You know, that's mainly all it was 2.5. Mm-hmm. Every now and then you catch a 3.5. And, you know, a 17, 16 was a big bag, you know, 5, 6, 10 years ago. And so now, you know, during the wintertime, 17 is just a normal bag. I know 2 years ago when it flooded, you could have 18 and you may not even get a check in a 20-boat tournament. And 18 is a big bag for Smith Lake. Hmm. And, I mean, there was multiple – I know a couple of days there was 3 bags over 20. I've brought in like 19 and got second. I think I brought 20 in one day and got second. So there are no doubt it makes the fish healthier. I'm just not sure about the aquatic system. But I know there's not enough herring in there to mess it up right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they thought they was going to take over, but they didn't. You don't see them even like you seen them 3 years ago, you don't see them. I don't know if the bass ate them, the stripers ate them, because it is full of big stripers. Mm-hmm. And they say they can eat like 20% of their weight or something a day, I've heard. So, I mean, I think they wiped them out. But there's still some, and, you know, if you find that some, there's bass around them.
Well, it's been an interesting topic because they have been introduced. Mm-hmm. They weren't native to the fishery, and you would think that would kind of play over into the Classic. But since you've kind of given your spiel on that, Jim is going to jump into last season. He's going to jump into early this season. We can probably hop right over the Classic at that point.
Absolutely.
But he's got a lot of numbers to talk, and this is where it gets interesting, and you give all your inside. This is a gut check time, right?
Well, Jesse, one thing. I've heard some people call you Jess. And then some people, Jesse. So let's just get that clear right now. Which do you go by?
Jesse. Okay. And I also have a nickname. I seen it written on the board. Yeah. Crank is my nickname.
Yeah.
It's short for crankbait. And the story about that is, I would like everybody to know it because a lot of people don't know, but I was 5 years old me and my brother was playing hide-and-go-seek. And I run out on the back porch, and we had spilt the tackle box on the back porch and didn't clean it up. So, of course, I run out on the back porch, and I see a crankbait laid on the porch, and I step over it. Well, I think my brother goes down the hallway or something, and I take off running, and I forget about the crankbait. I step right on it. I can remember it like it was yesterday. Step right on it, it hung in my foot.
Ooh.
You know, I'm 5 years old. I go down screaming, you know, hollering. And my daddy tries to get it out, can't get it out. You know, he takes the, you know, takes it off the hook and everything, takes the ring off, and it just, he can't get it out without me screaming. So he's like, well, I guess we're going to go to the emergency room. So he took me to the emergency room and got it took out, and he told me that day, he's like, I guess we're going to call you Crankbait from now on. And from that day on, everybody in my hometown, that's all they know me by.
Wow.
So, I mean, I leave it on my personal Facebook page just on there because a lot of people didn't even know my real name growing up. They would just ask me, you know. A lot of the guys we would go hunting and fishing with, they didn't even know my name was Jesse.
See,
I was just known by Crank. Or,
and I thought that had to do with fishing style or something like that.
No, I do love to throw a crankbait, no doubt. But yeah, that, everybody thinks it's because I throw a crankbait a lot, but it's not. I mean, it's, I stepped on that bait. And
he became intimately involved with the crankbait.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to know one.
Well, yep, that's the story on that, though, but yeah.
So that's
Jesse,
some good info.
You are 28 years old.
Yes.
And by a coincidence, you have fished 28 Bassmaster tournaments between the Opens and the Classic mm-hmm. and the Elites. So I don't know, that might be a sweet spot for you right now.
That sounds like a plan. You can win it grand then.
You fished two Classics. We talked about those. Talked about Houston. You finished 33rd there, and Greenville finished 46th. Of those 28, you've been in the money 18 times. All right, so really a strong percentage. That's 64% of the tournaments you've fished at Bassmaster, you have been in the money. So you keep up that percentage, and you'll be able to keep doing this for a little while.
Yeah.
You've had three first place tournaments, and first one was 2016 at Smith Lake. Second one was Harris Chain. 2017, that was an open as well, and then 2017 at Smith Lake. So we're going to come back to Smith Lake in just a minute and talk about that a little bit more.
Almost should have won his first Elite.
Yes.
I know I'm jumping you, but.
Yeah, and that's you've had one third place finish. That was at Cherokee, Lake Cherokee in East Tennessee. And if I remember right, you led at least 2 days of that tournament, or was it?
Yeah, the second, third.
Because did Cliff Crochet lead the first day?
After the first day.
And then you led the next 2 days, and then you had the unfortunate luck that me and Steve Bowman covered you and apparently messed up your luck. And so, you know, we'll take a little bit of the blame there. You've had five top 10 finishes, and 806 pounds of bass caught in that time, and $283,000 and $115,000 in earnings for that time in a very short career with Bassmaster. So let's look back at kind of your career with us. And first tournament that I'm showing was 2012 on Smith Lake. And I had begun to believe that he just wins every time we're on Smith Lake. And so I was surprised to see that he finished 56th.
Well, I don't know. It was Jordan said something about if there's ever an Elite on Smith Lake that they'll just pay you up front and everybody else will fish for second.
Yeah, everybody just, and maybe he can take it off. And
yeah, just don't go. Don't sore mouth all the fish. Leave some for everybody else.
He could be on the live show and give pointers. So that was 2012. And then you skipped a year in terms of Bassmaster. Your next tournament at Bassmaster was 2014. That was at Kissimmee in Florida, and you finished 15th. Tell us about that gap in there. So you fished one at home and then didn't. What was going on in your life at that point?
I got out of respiratory school, which I was a respiratory therapist. I went to graduated high school in 08. And then I went to respiratory school from 09 through 11. So I bought my boat in 2012, right before that open on Smith. And that's when I, you know, I didn't know if I could be a professional fisherman. I always wanted to. So, but that open was coming to Smith, and, you know, I'm always fishing Smith. You know, we grew up fishing there. So I thought, okay, it's time to fish, you know, if we're going to see if we can do it. And finished 56th. I don't know. I still don't know how I finished 56th.
Were you a boater?
A boater. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did the wrong. I didn't know enough about the lake in the fall at that time to win. So I just kind of scraped up that, and it was, the lake was tough then too as well. But I actually had a good practice that tournament. Thought I could win the tournament. I don't know. I just didn't adapt. Finished 56th.
Yeah.
I still look back at that's my least favorite tournament.
Okay.
But
all right.
So the next year, I was still working my respiratory job. I mean, I didn't have enough money to go fish the opens, so I didn't really know. didn't, I mean, I just had my old, Stratus that I had, I'd bought in 2012. So I didn't know, I mean, I didn't know if I could actually do it or not. Mm-hmm. So I didn't fish that year. Well, the next year was 14.
Right.
And they was coming back to Smith. So, and it was in the spring, and it's the time of year I thought, okay, I can win this time mm-hmm. of year. So I was like, well, I might as well fish all three because it may qualify for the Classic. I had no aspirations of qualifying for the Elite Series. Didn't even know if I could.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't even think about it and had zero sponsors. Like, I'd never even put – I didn't even have a fishing resume. Didn't have anything. So I didn't – I mean, I knew I wanted to be a professional fisherman. I had an urge. I fish every day. You know, there's no doubt. But, I mean, I had no funds. Like, I didn't have – I mean, you know, I didn't – I mean, I had a family that supported me growing up, no doubt, but I mean, we didn't have enough money for, you know, pay entry fees. So I knew that the only way I could ever do it was to win tournaments. So I thought, okay, I can, you know, if I went fish Smith, you know, I may win and make the Classic. That'd be cool. So I was like, I'll fish all three.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I fished all three and finished second, I think, in the points that year in the Opens and qualified for the Elites. So, but yeah, that's, I mean, between that gap, I don't want to jump ahead of you or anything, but that's where I was at during that time. I just didn't have the funds.
How many guys do you say they're fishing the Opens and don't care about qualifying for the Elites? Not very many. No. I mean, there are some, particularly guys who want to fish a particular region or something like that.
Did you watch the points at one point or
after the second tournament, I was leading the points and, but I mean, I didn't have any. Like, I didn't even have any contacts to say, hey, I'm, you know, I may qualify for the Elites. I knew, oh, man, I need a sponsor, you know. I didn't know anybody. I knew Matt a little bit. That's the only person I knew. Didn't really know Jordan at the time. We grew up 20 minutes from each other but went to different schools, so I never really knew him until mm-hmm. we started fishing mm-hmm. all these tournaments.
Yeah.
So, but Matt was the only one I knew at all. So, I mean, I didn't, you know, and he hadn't even qualified for the Elites at that time, so he didn't have any insight or anything. Right. So, they was still doing their college thing, so, but I didn't know anybody. So, but I was leading the points, and I'm like, man, you know, I'm making do this. That's all in my mind. Yeah. It was just telling myself that, like,
and that's some that's
making
some,
do this.
There's some decent money in those, you know, those finishes,
right? And then the fishermen in the Opens are, you know, half the field's Elite Series guys.
Right.
Or, you know, there's about 30 or 40 in each tournament. So, you know, I'm like, well, hey, you know, I know one was on Smith, but I was like, you know, two tournaments into it, you know, I'm leading the points. So, and everybody's like, local vantage don't help. So I start believing that, okay, I can fish anywhere, as you know. And but before I went to Florida that year in 2014, I'd never fished out of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still so brand new going to all these lakes.
Right.
Because I've never been outside of Alabama before that year. So that's why I didn't know. And I mean, like, qualifying for the Elites was like so far out of my mind, knowing that I wasn't ready because I'd never been out of Alabama before. So just knowing that's what, I didn't have it in my mind that I'm going to qualify for the Elites. I got entry fees paid if I none of that was going on. So I was just fishing just in case I won that Open so I could make it to the Classic that year.
So the three three Opens that year, Kissimmee, where you finished 15, Smith Lake finished 6th, and then Lake Norman in North Carolina, you finished 37. And you said finished 2nd in the points that year for the Southern Opens. Okay, so fantastic. During that time, did you know David Kilgore at all?
I knew of him, didn't know him personally, knew of him.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. So then another gap in there where you didn't fish the Opens in 2015 and then came back in 16, once again to Kissimmee being the first tournament in there. So in that year in between, in 2015, you probably focused on your respiratory therapy job.
And we fished
saving some money.
That, and we fished all we could at home. You know, the Alabama Bass Trail got really big in 14.
Right.
That was the first year of it. So we started fishing that. And so that 14 year, we fished that, and I qualified for the Elites that year too, but fished all around North Alabama. Well, me and my brother, I think, finished like 8th in the points and that. And this is the best fisherman in North Alabama, and that is a really stout
trail. Alabama Bass Trail is considered one of the toughest, I don't want to say non-pro, but non-pro bass trails in the nation.
Yeah.
No pros can fish it. Right. So it's all amateurs and it's all local, just
good,
sticks.
Good prize money.
Yeah, and it is. So that year, I think we finished 8th or 9th in the points that year in 14. And then I'm like, okay, you know, we had never been to any of the lakes before. You know, all we fished was Smith. We had our grandpa's boat up until I bought mine in 2012. So didn't even have a depth finder on it. So I got my first depth finder in 2012. So, you know, these guys are winning I mean, I'm fishing against guys that's won five classics before I had a depth finder, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, that's nice. In back of my mind. I'm thinking, okay, can I even compete against these guys? So, I mean, I'm a realist. I'm the biggest realist. I don't get too far in front of myself. Like, I realize what I can do, and I go do that. So, that's why I was, like, the elites was so far out of my mind at that time.
Yeah.
But that year on the Alabama Bass Trail, I'm like, okay, you know, I would go and practice. My brother had to work in my respiratory job. I know I'm taking a long time.
You're good. Keep it up.
Okay. So my respiratory job, I was able to work. I had a really awesome boss, so I was able to work the first 3 days of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And my tournaments, I would get to practice Thursday, Friday, and the tournament would be on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to practice for all these lakes by myself, and, you know, I'd find us enough fish, and my brother's the catcher. I mean, I'm a dip netter. Don't trust me.
But I've heard that story. Yeah. There's some real truth to that.
Yeah. But I would find us some fish, and, you know, we'd do okay. And like I said, we finished like eighth, and that was our first time, you know, getting off of Smith. So that gave me a little bit of confidence. Like, okay, I qualified for the elites. You know, we did good in this. So, okay, maybe I can, you know, find some fish at different lakes. So 15 was like, okay, we'll do the opens wasn't coming back to Smith, and I didn't have any money, you know, really. So it's like, I'm not going to go fish the opens because they're not coming to Smith. So we just fished the Alabama Bass Trail,
mm-hmm.
and we won the points that year of the North Division. So, I mean, like I said, it's the same lakes again, but, you know, it's different times of the year and stuff, so we kind of did the practice the same way. I'd go and practice and stuff. So when we won that, I thought, okay, you know, these are a lot of good fishermen up here, and we was able to win the points. So that's a good news.
Confidence builder.
Yes, confidence builder to find fish on new lakes. Mm-hmm. So in 2016, the Opens was coming back to Smith. And if you want to go ahead and get to the point. But,
well, here are your finishes.
Right.
2016, back to Kissimmee, 36 there. Smith Lake, you won it.
Yep.
In 2016. And then Douglas Lake in Tennessee finished 11th there. So where did you stand in the
second
points?
Second again. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
So, again, you qualify for the Elite Series.
But that was my plan going into the 2016 year. They was coming to Smith. And I did good in the Alabama Bass Trail,
mm-hmm.
and I qualified. And I was like, you know, I qualified once. If I qualify again, I'm going to do it, but I got to win Smith Lake Tournament. That was my plan. When the schedule came out, I was like, I'm going to qualify for the elites, but I have to win the Smith Lake to have the funds to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the plan was. And I don't – like I've told 100 people this. I don't know if it's, you know, just good fortune and luck, the good Lord bless me. I mean, I know it's all that into one. But it happened exactly how I planned it, to win that tournament. And, you know, qualify for the Classic, that's an extra $10,000 guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, qualify for the elites by finishing good in the other two. So it happened exactly how it needed to happen for me to be a – like, if I wouldn't have won that tournament, I wouldn't be sitting
here
right now.
Yeah.
And, but it – you know, the fish – the funny thing about that tournament is a lot of people don't know it, but I wasn't – all practice the fish that I knew I could win the tournament on was not there. All of practice. Never showed up. The last day of practice, I was like, I got to check them one more time. Checked them. They showed up the day before the tournament started.
Wow.
And I was able to win the tournament off that. And so I'm like, okay, this may be meant to be because, you know, I know I'm not getting lucky 2 years in a row to qualify for the Elite Series.
Right.
With all these guys that try to do it every year.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be just luck. So I got to be able to catch them decent. And after I won that tournament, I had the funds to qualify for the Elites. I decided to fish them.
I think you're wise in terms of that first time you made the elites, not jumping in.
Mm. Exactly. I agree.
We see some guys many years who make it in and who then really aren't ready.
Yep.
And might not make it through the whole season even.
The restructuring of the Opens in a lot of ways is meant to help curtail that.
Because I think
so. The unfortunate reality is the trail to the Elite Series is covered in broken hearts.
Oh yeah.
And even those
bank accounts.
Yep. Well, that's a fact too. But to have that wisdom, I mean, I'm not sure I have that wisdom at my age to step away from an opportunity like that.
Yeah.
Did you deliberate on that for a long time, or did you know right away, like, I can't yet, I'm not ready yet?
Well, in my mind, I knew I wasn't ready fishable. But, of course, like, I was still like, hey, if somebody wants to pay my entry fees, I'm going to do it. But I didn't have anybody. Like, I tried a few things, but nothing to the amount of money I needed to want to do it that first year. But in my mind, like I said, I hadn't been out of Alabama, but, you know, them three tournaments fishing. Yeah. And the elites, I think one of them was on Wheeler. But other than that, one of them was on Gunnersville that year, 2015. So other than that, it was places I'd never been. So I was like, I can't, you know, I can't take this chance. I mean, like I said, I didn't have the money anyways, but I knew that I wasn't ready yet, and I wouldn't. I mean, yeah. I know I wouldn't.
It's a big decision like that that probably helped you make the right Absolutely. Decision down the road and set up a plan, and that's smart.
Yep.
So we go into 2017. You've made the elites, but you're still fishing the Southern Opens.
Right.
And let's hit those real quick. First Open of the year was at Harris Chain, and Jesse Wiggins rolls in and wins it. So he's had his last three tournaments into 2016. Smith Lake won it, Douglas Lake 11th place, and then Harris Chain first place. And so really nice start to the year. And in my mind, I kind of looked at that and went, okay, this isn't a guy who can just win at Smith Lake.
Right.
That was impressive to me.
Although I've covered only two Opens since I've been here, and they've both been Smith Lake, and you've won them both. And I mean, I'm getting a little tired of just the
really.
You
know,
I'm not.
Things never change. I know you're not tired about that at all.
Getting a little boring.
Give me something exciting. No.
So your other Opens in 2017, you win at Harris Chain. The second Open of the year was at Chickamauga on the Tennessee River, and you finished 120. Which, looking at your whole 28, you don't have any other finishes even near that. What happened at Chickamauga?
I was going to try to win the tournament because I knew I was in the Classic already.
Yeah.
I was in the elites. I had the qualification for the rookie qualification the next year. So
yeah.
It didn't matter what I finished in the elite points. I knew I was in the elites, so I didn't have to do it in the Opens. And it was, I'd already, you know, won the one in Harris. I'm like, well, I'm going to try to win all three because I knew I could win on Smith. I mean, in my mind, I think I can win. I didn't know I was going to win. But I was like, well, I'm going to try to win all three. So I've practiced deep the whole tournament, and I just didn't know enough about the lake to do that. And that's where I messed up.
Yeah. It happens.
Yep.
And then the third Open of the year was then at Smith Lake, and you won it.
Yes.
So, again, I was beginning to believe he wins them all at Smith Lake.
Well,
so I guess it's a little bit good to know that he doesn't.
You know, but there's this thing that happens when you're fishing your home lake. You kind of get labeled the, you know, he knows this lake too well. It isn't fair to everybody else, but it has to feel good to just
When I launched the boat on that lake, like, I expect to win. Like,
yeah.
And that helps. Like, it's a lot of guys that, you know, that fish the elites now, any lake they go, they put the boat in the water. They want to win. Like,
well, there's 110 Kevin. Of them expect to win every tournament.
And well, you know, and here's the thing to Jesse's credit is how many lakes do we go to where, I mean, every lake we go to on the Elite Series, there's somebody that's got a home field advantage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right? Every single one of them. And how many times do those guys win?
Not much.
Not much.
Well, and it's not too often we have a schedule that has a stop that is, I guess, really an open situation. We have that this year going to Oahe in South Dakota.
That's true.
I think that'd be the only one.
Yeah.
There's guys that you can probably think of that'll do well, and it might be like a Cliff Pace that'll come in and shock everybody. But or Jesse Wiggins, you know.
That'd be
fun. I just say that because the home field advantage isn't all that it's cracked up to be a lot of times.
Right.
Seems like it can be the kiss of death, or it can be the best thing ever.
Right. Yeah. All right, so your first elite season goes like this. You roll into Cherokee, finish third. We've talked a little bit about that. It's in February. It was a winter tournament, really. Then we go to Okeechobee, the big lake down in Florida, and finish 40th. Very respectable, I think, in my mind.
I was happy with it.
We see a lot of guys bomb at that tournament.
First time I was ever there, so
okay.
I was happy
with it. Okay, well done. Then there's the Houston Classic. We've talked about that. Then we go to Toledo Bend in Louisiana. You finish 42nd, finish in the money at a tournament where a lot of guys catch some big bags. Then we go to Ross Barnett, 69th place at Barnett. Go to Rayburn, 82nd. Dardanelle, 48. Then we go up north, and this kind of continues this trend that we've talked about, Thomas, where we have these southern guys who go up north and do pretty well. And Jesse falls into that. Go to St. Lawrence. He finishes 24th, fishes 3 days at that tournament. Then Champlain, 64. St. Clair, 56. Then we go to Minnesota for the Mille Lacs tournament, and he finishes 25th. So a solid year. In AOY, you finished 37.
Yep.
Not a bad rookie season to roll in and compete at a high level all the way through the season. For your elite tournaments, your worst finish was an 82nd. That was at Sam Rayburn. Second worst is 69. And I tell you what, you know, when we see some guys bomb, they tend to be a little higher than that. So I've put those into the respectable category.
Well, and you can have a bad tournament or two. I mean, you know, look at Brandon's here last year. Had 100 right. and something finish
yeah,
in one of those events.
I think, at Okeechobee.
Yeah.
Aaron, a couple years before, Aaron Martin's, the year he won AOI's most recent one, he finished 89th. He finished in the 80s at Sabine and recovered from that. So actually higher than any of your finishes. Tell us about the elite season. What was that like for you? I mean, as a touring pro now, you're living on the road for much of the year.
Yeah, it was, in one word, I guess it was awesome, I guess. Awesome slash a tad bit disappointed. And the only, in my mind, it helped me knowing, like, you know, I was close in all the tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And even Rayburn, I was 82nd, but I wasn't just but a few pounds out of the cut because it was so close. So, in my mind, like, I knew I had the fish that I could have made every cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not have good practices. So, in my mind, I felt like I did decent, you know. And because, you know, like I said, I had some fish that, you know, everybody says that. But, I mean, in my mind, I knew I had some fish that I could have made every cut. So, that made me feel a lot better about, okay, I can go to new lakes and maybe I can compete. So, overall, I felt good about it, and like I'm hoping I can just keep that going in the 20.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I get enough bites that I can make every cut, I feel like it's my opportunity. You know, I've did my job. I got to just land them from now on. So, overall, I mean, I feel like it was – I mean, I qualified for the Classic through points, so I'm not going to complain because a lot of guys would trade places with me in a heartbeat.
Yeah, right.
So it was my rookie year. I mean, I'm not going to complain that much because I'd never been to a single lake that we went on the Elite Series schedule, not one single one. And of this year, of course, I've never been to any of the ones we're going to this year besides St. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be more of the same thing. So I'm just trying to just hang on and get by to where I get, you know, kind of familiar with some of the lakes we go to and that kind of thing. And but overall, I mean, I would say it was a success. I mean, anybody that qualifies through the Classic on the Elite Series through points, you know, big picture-wise, that's a big deal because there's a – I mean, we get – me and Matt and all of us get to talk about it every week. You know, you look at the list of 110 anglers on the Elite Series, and you find you 50 of them you think you can beat, you know.
Right.
It's not that easy.
No.
I mean, you show up to a tournament, you know, water you've never been to, you know, you pick your 51 of them that you think you're going to fish ahead of, you know. So, you know, overall, I mean, I will take it. And, you know, if I finish 37th every year, that means I qualify for the Classic every year, and, you know, I can make a living at this.
But that's not going to satisfy you.
Oh, absolutely not.
See, and that's
I wanted to win Angler of the Year last year, and that was my first year. So
the tenacity that they have
mm-hmm.
is noteworthy because, and a lot of them, I think I heard this somewhere, if you don't show up to the boat launch in the morning thinking you can win, you've already lost.
Exactly.
And there's something to that.
So if we offered you $100 just to go ahead and sit this one out, if you could have the same finish.
I wouldn't do it for 100.
Okay, man.
There may be an amount that I would do it for.
How about a month worth of, like, you know, really good, well smoked ribs or something like that?
That's about as high as I'll go out of my pocket. Yeah. I don't know if Thomas will come down with that anymore. Well, we can't do that.
I'm pretty cheap.
Illegal. Well, we roll into 2018, and first elite tournament of the year is Lake Martin in Alabama, and you finish 18. And there's something to be said for that. The number of Alabama anglers that fished in that tournament, is it 18 guys? It's a big number.
We've had most of them in here anyway.
It's astounding how many elite anglers live in the state of Alabama. So not very many of them fished very high in that tournament. Now, Dustin Cannell had a good finish.
Yep.
Justin Lucas had a good finish, a top 12.
He's not an Alabama guy, though. I mean, he lives in Alabama, but, you know, he's been there for
California.
A couple of years.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he's a heck of a fisherman. Like,
well,
we
understood him nice and clearly. His enunciation was precise.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
There were words. There's a couple words you've already said. I'm having to look them up. I mean, you said used to could or something like that, but I understand that. And this is what I think we need to pin this on. You know, we've talked about our a lot of the guys we've had in here, about all of them, have a really strong check cashing percentage.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about that. But almost all of them, I think Brandon Lester was in here, but have been Alabama guys. And I want your take on how Alabama fishing has prepared you for the top levels.
Yeah.
And it's really set the tone for the anglers we've had in the office here to say, look, they've got some high percentage check cashing performances, and there's a lot of other anglers. I know that if we put them all, stood them all up and crunched all their numbers, they would not be that consistent. So why has Alabama prepared you to be good at this?
The main thing, in which everybody says, is the diversity of all the fisheries. You know, you got the Tennessee River, and then you got the Coosa River. So you got spotted bass, Tennessee River, you got grass, you got smallmouth on the Tennessee River. And then Smith Lake, I fish, it's clear water, spotted bass. So, I mean, just by those three sections that's within an hour drive of each other, you know, you got half the country, you know, what you fish for. Mm-hmm. So that helps. And then plus just the level of anglers that are in Alabama. There's a lot of guys that fish in Alabama right now that's not on the Elite Series that could compete on the Elite Series.
For sure.
So, I mean, I think that's it. You grow up knowing you have to catch them or you're going to get sent home with no money. So I think, like, I know Cannell's the same way, which I talk to him a lot, and, you know, he shows up wanting to win, even if it's a local jackpot derby. He's just like me. He shows up, and he's going to try to win the tournament. And so we take that over into the Elite Series, and that helps. And just knowing all, you know, just the never giving up, you know, grind it out. And that's the Elite Series, you know, overall, is just the complete grind it out. And I think that's, in my mind, that's what helps the most in Alabama because, you know, all the guys are so good and all the trails you have to fish, you know, coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I don't consider myself one of the best in Alabama by any means, but, like, just, you know, by looking over how many's in Alabama. So, I mean, I feel very fortunate to be where I'm at. So, but I think that's the main thing is the, you know, the diversity and then the anglers in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Spot on.
Right. Very good. So you grew up in Cullman, which
– Grew up in Addison, actually. Addison's a small town just east of Cullman, west of Cullman, about 25 miles.
Okay.
That's where I went to high school, Addison High School.
Gotcha.
So. But my address says Cullman, so I just – always say Coleman. But
yeah, no doubt. Got the Lee brothers up there. You've talked a little bit about them.
Yep.
Strong fishing community.
Absolutely.
You know, with Smith Lake up there and easy access to Gunnersville, those other kind of places. And so you rolled out of high school and went into school to be a medical respiratory therapist.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and what led you to that.
Well, the funny story is I knew that I'd worked in construction growing in high school. My grandpa built houses, so I worked with him some during the summer, and I got a dose of exactly what I did not want to do. So I knew I didn't want to do that. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I was wanting to work in the air conditioner if I was going to be, you know, working.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And, I mean, I made good grades in high school, so I was like, you know, I can go and be something in the medical field. I did some job shadowing and stuff. But Wallace State, which is there in Hansville, worked, mm-hmm. you know, that's the closest college to our house. It's a junior college, so... You know, I didn't have no money to go to no big four-year school or anything. So I was like, well, I'm just going to go there, get a degree, you know, in a hospital job, and just try to make some money, save up enough money to buy a boat. I mean, the goal was to be a professional fisherman, I mean, the whole way. But, you know, when you don't have any money in your pocket, you got to, you know, work your way up.
Well, you still got to pay your bills.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so fishing tournaments is not a good way to pay your bills a lot of times.
Right.
So that's why I decided I was just going to, you know, take it. I gave myself 5 years when I got out of respiratory school. Yeah, I got my first job. I was like, I'm going to give myself 5 years to make it, to be a professional fisherman. So that's what I did. I got out of school, worked for like a year, saved up enough money, bought my first boat, and I just started fishing locally as much mm-hmm. as I could. And I gave myself 5 years. I was like, if I don't make it in 5 years, you know, I'm going to get married, build the house, you know, have the kids, all that thing.
Right.
So the fifth year, I qualified for the Elites in 2017, which would have been, the fourth year of fishing. But so that, I mean, I did it just in time, won that tournament, you know, that got me started. But the whole thing was to, you know, I wanted a job where I could, you know, work 12-hour shifts, 3 days a week, fish the rest of the week. And that's exactly what I did, and that helped more than anything, being able to fish.
Tell us what a respiratory therapist does.
A respiratory therapist is the guy that gives, or the female, that's what Alex does as well. She's a respiratory therapist. That's actually how I met her at the hospital. So,
okay.
But we give, the main deal we do is breathing treatments when people like have asthma, come in with COPD.
Mm-hmm.
We take care of them, do the breathing treatments, give them breathing treatments, that kind of stuff. And then the more serious the stuff we do with when patients get put on a ventilator, you know, life support, all that stuff, we handle that machine. So we, you know, we do everything involved with it. You know, the doctors kind of tell us what kind of settings and stuff they want, and we do that, and we manage them as while they're on it. So I think that, and overall, that helps me mentally, knowing I'm getting to go bass fishing every day, and, you know, you go back at the hospital and you see stuff as serious as we see, you know, you lose a fish and stuff like that, and you're like, okay, you know, I'm getting a bass fish for a living. This ain't that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, it keeps me grounded. So that, I think that helps a lot.
Have you continued to do the respiratory therapy job during the elite? During
yes. When elite? I'm at home, I work a lot of times 1 or 2 days a week. Hmm. When okay. We're not gone. So I still work. I mean, I spend all that money on that, you know, education. I'm not going to let it go to waste. And,
yeah.
You know, if something happens and I don't get another bite the rest of my life, I mean, I'm going to need a job. So, and I ain't going to go build houses. So.
That's an awful lot of wisdom coming from this
guy.
Yeah,
smart guy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just knew, I mean, where we come from, you know, you got to work to get what you get, you know. Yeah. And so nothing was ever gave, you know, like I said, we got support all around. You know, my whole family, I got a big family, but, you know, they come to all the tournaments, you know, when they're close. So. But, you know, we just didn't have that much money. So I knew, you know, we had to earn our way. So, I mean, I ain't never going to forget where I came from, that's for sure.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's where we need to go next. You stepped on a crankbait that may have, well, it did impale you, but it impacted your life.
Yeah.
Maybe in a funny sort of way, but all the way from that point to where you're at, obviously there's an important turning point
mm-hmm.
where fishing became really important to you.
Right.
And there was somebody along the way that probably invested in that and saw your interest and kept it rolling. And that's kind of the inside scoop to this whole deal is where did Jesse Wiggins become Jesse Wiggins,
yeah,
a fisherman?
Just from when I was born, I can't, like, people ask me, when did you start fishing? Well, I don't remember because I was so young. My daddy always fished when he was younger, and I fished a lot of tournaments around home. And so, you know, we grew up, we was always fishing every weekend, you know, or it didn't matter if we was running limb lines on the lake, trot lines, fishing from a pond, you know, fishing from the bank on the lake, going in a boat. We was always fishing or hunting, so we grew up, you know, I grew up doing that. So, but, you know, people have these stories of their first fish or all that. I have no idea. I can't remember when I didn't fish. So mm-hmm. It's just always been a part. And I think my daddy took me in a tournament when I was 5 years old. And I remember I was so young that I told my mother to record the Power Rangers episode that was coming on, and it was the one you had to record with the, you know, the VHS
whatever tape. You just had that recorded, the recent movie,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
When I left for the Martin tournament, that's when. but that's how young I was, and I went and fished it was a night tournament, and we got second in big fish. I remember it like it was yesterday. He caught like nearly a 5-pounder. Got second big fish, won like, you know, $250, and I thought that was the best thing in the world.
Did he give you any of the money?
And heck yeah, he caught it, but he gave me half the money, you know. So from that point on, fishing tournaments was all I was about. And my brother, Jordan, he's a year and a half younger than I am. So my daddy kind of quit fishing as we got older, and so that me and him kind of started going. Well, we didn't have a boat. My grandpa had an old boat. It was an old Bumblebee with a 200 on it, and we started fishing out of it, and it was a piece of junk now. I mean, I'm talking about when we was from, I guess, when we got out of high school till I bought my boat in 2012, so there was 4 years there. We used that boat, and I remember showing up to Smith on tournaments. It would be cold, and that old, you know, that old Johnson motor would not crank with it cold outside. And I remember, you know, we fished. I remember one day, 2 days in a row, it did not crank because it was so cold that spring. And we had to fish at the dam, you know, without the motor cranking, and won both tournaments without the motor cranking. And so I was like, okay, you know, we're pretty good fishermen if we can do this without the motor. We're not this lucky, you know, because, I mean, we never grew up with that much luck. So, I mean, it was, you know, you make your own kind of luck. So, but after, you know, that boat, that motivates me now to catch a bass because I do not want to have to go back to a boat that won't crank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now, I, you know, I get to run, you know, my boat and a Honda and all that. So I'm so happy, you know, where I've got to where I am now. But I know my motor's going to get, you know, crank every time now. But yeah, but, you know, I grew up fishing. You know, my brother, we started fishing tournaments together when we was, as soon as one of us could drive with the vehicle, so on Smith. And we fished 3 nights a week from 2009 when he graduated till, I mean, we still fish some now during the week when they have tournaments. So, but we would fish a Tuesday night, a Wednesday night, and a Friday night, and then a Saturday morning.
Wow.
Every week, 4 tournaments a week. So our summer job when we was, you know, just had got out of high school, we could win enough tournaments that week and we didn't have to work much. So we could work some during the day, but we could go fishing. We'd win, you know, $200 a piece. $200 a piece when you didn't have any bills, you know.
Right.
It was pretty good. And we was – so
basically that, he was working at fishing.
Yeah, we was.
Before he became a pro.
Exactly. And I think that really helped because we knew that if we didn't catch any fish, we didn't get paid, so we didn't get to put gas in the boat for the next night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the deal, and, I mean, we just grew up grinding. And so that's where fishing, and, I mean, it's never got old to me. I still wake up, want to go, you know, every day. And even I don't, you know, I've been a million times, and I still want to go again. So,
is your brother upset with you that you're not as available now for his for teams?
Yeah, the Alabama Bass Trail, he has to fish it with another guy now. So, I mean, I miss that. God, I wish I could go back and fish that. I love team tournaments so much. But, yeah, we don't get to fish as much together, but, you know, we still try to go when we can for sure. But I do miss team tournaments. God, I miss it a lot.
So your heritage is something that's really important to who you are. And you've kept in touch with that. You still have a job outside of Tour and the Elite Series. How important is that to you, I guess, as your persona? You know, everybody knows you as this hardworking guy. You've been there. You've struggled. Why is it important to keep in touch with your past and I guess stay humble?
Yeah, it's exactly that, just to stay motivated. I still, like I tell her, I go to work, you know, just to – make sure I don't have to go back to doing this full time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't hate my job or anything like that at the hospital, but, I mean, I want to fish for a living. So when I show up to the hospital and, you know, I have to clock in and stuff, I'm like, okay, I don't want to do this. I want to catch a bass. So it keeps me motivated to keep, you know, keep catching them. So that's one of the reasons I didn't quit as well. And so I think that helps a lot, is just, you know, showing up and, you know, punching the clock. And it just, like I said, I don't hate it, but it just keeps me motivated to catch some fish.
Well, when you're not having to catch a bass to pay your, you know, electric bill, and maybe you've got another way to do that kind of keeps you calm and squared away with all that. But, Jim, with the cell phone. This is one of those things I won't edit out because I'll bring it up later and be like, you remember the time we're trying to do this show?
Yeah, I know. That's a bad look.
Nah,
sorry about that.
I don't care.
That's all right. I'd get a different ringer. I mean, that's like the first ringer on the list of choices.
I know, the generic.
Got to keep it real. So you talk about that, and I think that you have a lot of insight to give. You've made a lot of big choices in your life. You said no to the Elite Series once. You fished two classics. You have all this experience under your belt. And looking at today's youth, you know, we have a tremendous pipeline of young talent getting groomed at the junior level and the high school level, going into college. You didn't fish at college, but I think you still have a lot of insight to give, you know, to these young kids that are eyeballing a potential career. And for a lot of people, let's be honest, it's an NFL dream. It's a very small percentage of these kids are going to A, have the talent, B, have the support and funding, and the competition is so hot. But when you're talking to a young angler that's looking at making a run at something like this, what is the kind of advice you would give them?
The main thing, and, you know, I've heard it said a lot, but the main deal is catch fish. That is the main thing you have to do, because it ain't going to matter, you know, you're not never going to qualify for the Elite Series, you know, if you can't catch fish.
Mm.
So, you know, you have to catch fish. Focus on catching fish, time on the water. Spend time on the water, you know. Like me and my brother, we was fishing every chance we had. You know, like I said, three and four nights a week, and then on Saturday morning. So, you know, fish as much as you can. And then if it's your passion to be a professional angler, you're gonna want sponsors. There's no doubt. So start from the bottom. You know, work at your local boat dealership. You know, get your foot in the – that's where I messed up, and I tell people that. I messed up by not having my foot in any doors.
Mm-hmm.
I knew no one in the fishing industry when I qualified for the Elite Series. Like, not a single person. I had one sponsor when I started the 2017 season. Like, one guy
that
was paying me some money.
I remember talking.
And the only reason I had that was because they called Jordan Lee wanting to sponsor him, and he was already sponsored by Strike King, so he gave them my number. They didn't even try to contact me. So, I mean, I'm happy to have them now. I mean, it's one of my best sponsors now, so Genco Fishing. But they that was my first one. So I had zero, you know, my foot in zero doors. So my advice is, if that's what you want to do, you know, get your foot in the door, even if you're just hauling boats for someone.
Right.
You know, if you prove to them that you're willing to work and then you're able to catch fish, they're going to come back. They're going to come and help you out. I mean, just now, you know, after my first year, now that sponsors has really stepped up for me. So, and, you know, I didn't know any of them to start with. So it will happen. If your foot is in some doors, that is the key.
I remember talking
deal.
To Jesse at Cherokee, his first Elite tournament. And I believe was feeling the, you know, pressure of thinking about not having sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, he was at his first tournament. He had one sponsor, and he was really thinking a lot about, okay, I got to get some sponsors because, of course, you pay to fish in the Elite Series. And we see Jesse rolling in here today with a St. Croix Best Rods on Earth hoodie on. And I know they came on board with you in 2017. At what point did they come on?
They came on the week. It was funny, the week before the Cherokee tournament. It wasn't after, but a lot of people think it was after. I didn't have the rod. I was still using my own rods at Cherokee because they didn't get them shipped in time.
Okay.
It was like literally the day before I left for Cherokee, we got that signed. So, and then, but after Cherokee, I was able to use the St. Croix, and, you know, I've been in love with them ever since. So, but yeah, they helped me out a lot coming up this year. So, but yeah, that was about the week before the Cherokee tournament.
Did you find that a lot of the sponsorship opportunities slowly started to appear and present themselves, or did you really have to hunt them down?
Well, I got fortunate and won those opens, you know, pretty early in my career, so that helped a lot. You know, you was able to give them something to prove that you could, you know, fish and people's actually going to pay attention to you. So that helped a lot. But you can pursue and find stuff. There's no doubt. I don't want to tell nobody not to pursue because you can pursue. And, you know, just – and then another main thing is, too, is for the young anglers is, you know, keep your name clean. Don't get, you know, arguments on the water and, you know, don't bash other anglers or bash other people. That's the main thing because, you know, everybody in the fishing industry knows everyone.
It's a small industry.
It's, I mean, there's a ton of sponsors, but everybody, you know, half the general, you know, the CEOs has worked for, you know, three of the different companies, even the competing companies. So they know everyone in the fishing industry.
And they're watching.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, they're asking, like I've heard Gerald talk about it, you know, some of his sponsors ask him, hey, who's local, you know, young kid coming up that's good and stuff. So, I mean, if you're good at fishing, your name is going to get out there. And, but the main thing is to keep your name clean and, follow the rules and, you know, don't get any dirt on you. And that way, when you go to someone, they don't have any negatives about you. It's all going to be positive.
That's a great piece of advice.
Really,
that's something that we haven't talked about or heard mentioned. And that's something I've seen a lot of, especially and I was a high schooler and had a big mouth and got in a lot of trouble and did things I shouldn't have. So I'm not saying this like I don't understand, but I've seen a lot of high school kids post on social media like, well, you know, that rod isn't the rod I'm sponsored with, so they're garbage, and you need to switch.
Yeah.
And they kind of take that like bashing approach, and that
social
stuff gets
remembered. Social media is kind of a danger zone for anglers.
Yeah, stay. I mean, my key is just stay positive. You know, you don't just if you don't like a rod company, don't talk about it. So, I mean, you don't have to talk bad about it. Just,
right.
And just talk good about your stuff. So that's the main deal. Is just don't. There's no need in being negative about it because they definitely pay attention.
Yeah, it's important stuff. So you mentioned this earlier, and I wanted to circle back on this. You said you had a 5-year plan, and a lot of the other guys we've talked to kind of had the same approach. Like, they're going to give this a couple years, do the best they can, and if it didn't work out, you know, maybe whatever. But really, you get – let's just say you didn't have that great a year and didn't qualify for the elites. That dream wouldn't have gone away.
No, it wouldn't have. But I would have – I say that I wouldn't have.
It's a loaded question.
Fished, but I honestly probably wouldn't have did it. I wouldn't have, I wouldn't have wasted all the money I had trying to chase it. I mean, I know better than to, waste any money. So, I don't know. I feel like I would have had a good head on my shoulders about it. I would have probably waited on the opens to come back around to Smith again,
give it another
try
shot.
To win again or something like that. That would have been what I did. Because with my job, I was able to take off work, in stretches. There at the end before I quit, when I was full-time, I would work 7 on, 7 off, so or 8 on, 6 off. So, my stretch for the tournament, I would be off that whole week. So, I wouldn't be missing any work, any paycheck. So I would have arranged it where I could have still tried it, but, I wouldn't have jumped in the FOW tour or something like that and spent all my money on entry fees or nothing like that. I know better than that. So I would definitely work my way up.
Well, that's an important part to this game.
I got one more question for you. I've just shouting out just in case, and that is your traveling partner sometime this year or past year is Matt Lee. And tell us about Matt's organization skills and how they compare to yours. And
Matt,
we have to remember, has got an engineering degree.
You have two?
From Auburn. You could be right. I don't remember.
It's impressive.
How organized is he compared to you?
If there was a scale of, being the most organized angler on tour at 10 and then like a 1 being the worst angler, he's definitely a 10. His stuff is so dialed in. We have a last year we had this, I call it a ritual, but every tournament I was like, Matt, can I get in your boat and just look at your tackle? Because it was so like perfectly laid out, everything's labeled, no rust, you know, and I would just be like dream of my stuff looking like that, you know, and so I would like, can I just get up there and look? And I would just look at, you know, all these boxes, it's just perfect, you know, color coordinated and stuff, so everything's so neat. And but mine is like, I got different baits in different boxes, and I'm getting better because I know it does on the water. It saves a lot of time. Like when I was on Smith, growing up on Smith Lake, we had all of our tackle in one bag. You know, we was constantly changing boats, going with people that had boats.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we just had a small tackle, and we knew what we was going to throw. So, but now that you can't do that on Elites. You have to have different baits. I've learned that, you know, very quickly. You can't just go with what you want to fish with and catch them. You can't do it.
Have you upgraded from the Walmart bag?
I still have a few Walmart bags in the boat, no doubt.
You know what you need to do is get Matt, just turn him loose in your boat and say, fix this for me.
Yeah, he probably would. If I would let him just get in there for a little
while. He would cuss you.
He would be like, man, I can't
might mess you up at a tournament.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to find anything.
You gave him a rating of 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. Where are you?
As far as least, I'm probably one of the least organized, I'd say. Probably a
it's
one.
It's organized
or
chaos. Don't
right.
knock
I mean,
yourself
I know
down
where
too
it
far.
Is. Right. I know where everything is. And a lot of people, you know, we did that photo shoot with Chris Mitchell, you know, the Inside Elite Boats.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, he took a picture of, I think it was my rattle trap box, and like it was complete rust. I'd never throw a rattle trap. And he's like, man, what are you going to throw that in a tournament? I'm like, no, if it was a tournament, I would just take these hooks off, put brand new, because in a tournament, I'm going to have new hooks on anyway. So I'm like, there's no need in changing them right now because I'm probably not going to throw it. But if I do, I'll just change the hooks. And I just left the rust on it. You can take a rag and a little, you know, alcohol or anything, just wipe the rust right off. So I was like, I'm not going to be spending my time, you know, organizing my rattle traps when I haven't caught a bass on a rattle trap in like 5 years. So, you know, I just didn't, I don't care nothing about it. So it's, but that was funny though, you know, having all those, that rust and that, you know, it showed the normal angler that, I mean, I'm not that, I'm still just the normal guy with a bag full of stuff.
That photo gallery of your boat did incredibly well in terms of page views, and I believe it's just because the average angler liked seeing that you're a lot like them.
Yep.
And could relate to how you're handling your tackle.
Well, there's something to be said about a guy that keeps his stuff a little messy. I mean, you know, if you're too organized, maybe you're wasting a lot of time putting print. Does Matt, like, get a label maker?
Oh, he's got a label maker.
Oh, man.
And I will admit, though, I bought myself a label maker this year. His was so neat looking. I'm like, I need a label maker.
He's rubbing off on you.
But I would, yeah, he is, definitely, because I would write it on there with a Sharpie. Well, it fades off within 3 or 4 tournaments, everything bumping around, grabbing it. That label maker, it's on there for good.
Now, I got to ask you, Jesse, are you, like, just pulling the tape out, cutting it off, sticking it on your box, and then writing on the tape?
Because
you can punch in the buttons,
yeah.
And it'll...
Yeah.
I did spend one day, it was cold, and I just punched out all the labels for the boxes I had. But now it's like, just take the tape and just write. And I've rewrote on the boxes already this year. But Matt, God, though, he has helped me out a ton, though. I will say, I love rooming with him. And him and Abby both, that, you know, they would... just let me stay with them wherever, me and Kelly J. So
I
really do appreciate them letting us do that for sure, because, you know, she booked all the places for us to stay and all that, so I really do appreciate that. But they got them a fifth wheel now, though, so they'll be in a fifth wheel this year.
You had a quote that I read that said something about, like, Matt has a schedule to talk – calls me to talk – schedule a time to talk about the schedule or something.
Yeah,
he
makes a plan on making plans.
That's what it was.
They plan to make plans. Yeah,
yeah. Sounds like a corporate job. Yeah. We're gonna have a meeting about a meeting.
Yeah.
but yeah, it was they're dialed, no doubt they're dialed. And Matt, I'll have to text him like, hey, what's a good ramp? You know, he's already got all the ramps and around the lake for practice, and he'll send me the ramp, you know, a link to the ramp that I want to go to. And it's just so, I don't know, I use him for a lot. I really do appreciate it.
Well, it's good information to learn, no matter what your future may involve. You can be messy, you can be organized, and messy's not the right word, Jesse, but it is part of your we just started the song over. That's how long we let that run. That kind of stumbled me up a little bit. But that's good. So you've got a lot going on this year, a lot of stuff to look forward to, a lot of stuff to look back on to learn from. Right before we cut this off, one tournament 2018 that we've got ahead of us that you're looking forward to?
St. Lawrence River, no doubt.
Yeah.
I've been asked that a lot. That's the only one I've been to. It was one of my best finishes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know what to do now to try to win that tournament. Mm-hmm. So definitely, that's the one. I may not catch a bass there, but I am looking forward
to it. Me too. We always eat real well there.
Yeah, we do.
It's a good tournament.
And it's, you know, it's a great lake, or, you know, part of the great, I call it a great lake, but it's, you know, it's the river off the great lake. But the wind's usually not too bad, so you get to go, you get to run and catch fish, and I'm just looking forward to it. It's big smallmouth. Yeah, I love it.
Man, this has been good. Jesse, thanks so much. Congratulations on a great first season and getting a good start to season number two. Thanks for making it down here. Alex, I'm glad you're here. This is Inside Bassmaster. If you love listening to this show as much as we love making it, please go to iTunes and rate it with 5 stars. And, of course, we want you to be honest. And if you like other podcasts, you can check out Tom Abraham's show, Bassmaster Radio, which is also on Bassmaster.com. From Jesse Wiggins, from Alex, from Jim Sexton. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for being here. We'll catch you here next time at Inside Bassmaster.